Though Lotus Shaker's recordings feature a full ensemble, at its core, the band is a collaboration between two musicians who have taken separate styles and blended them into something fresh in the city's music scene. This is Kingston Live, and today we're joined by singer Brittany Langford and guitarist Dan Chisholm. Though you can call Lotus Shaker a rock band, there's a lot more going on under the hood. Elements of metal and R&B can be heard in their mix, and their writing draws inspiration from a diverse range of musical influences, from blues to jazz to classical. After forming in 2017, the duo performed, wrote, and recorded in the lead-up to their 2020 debut EP, Face Yourself. Self-produced during the quiet of early pandemic, Lotus Shaker quickly got to work on a follow-up. And after a trio of singles, Brittany and Dan find themselves on the cusp of their first full-length record.
It's got everything you'd want in a city, but without committing to a giant city environment.
Kingston has this history of this kind of camaraderie.
There's so many awesome musicians out there that they come out of the woodwork every year.
We knew Kingston had everything for us.
Hello, this is Kingston Live. It's John here with my friend Riley Jabor.
That's me. Hello.
You and I haven't done one of these in a long time, and I actually checked. It has actually been a year since you and I have been on the podcast at the same time.
Damn. When was the last time we did one together?
The last time was when we talked to Strippers Union.
Yes, that's right. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, that was
been a while.
That was March of last year, yes.
Well, we're back. Hello.
Yes, yes. Happy anniversary.
I didn't get you anything.
That's okay. I didn't want anything. But yeah, we're here with Brittany and Dan, Lotus Shaker. Hello.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Amazing segue, by the way. That was wonderful.
Yeah, that was.
Masterful.
We're both current and former radio, so we're masters of segues.
There you go.
Thank you so much for joining us on Kingston Live.
Thank you for having us. This is a pleasure. Thank you.
Really excited to be here.
We're going to start at the beginning. I'm really curious how the two of you met, because you two are quite the musical powerhouse, and it just seems like too much of a coincidence that you could have met just like at the grocery store or something. How did you meet? Was it personally or musically first? What's the story?
We actually met in college. We went to St. Lawrence College here in Kingston for the music and digital media program a long time ago. And we met there, and yeah, that's how it started. We started dating, and then immediately right after we said, well, we got to play music together. So we got a couple classmates together, and we've been playing ever since.
Cool.
Just very, you know, it was organic. It was awesome.
Yeah, I find that hard to believe. It just, again, seems like too good of a match musically, but that's great.
We had similar interests in music right away. You liked a lot of Robert Johnson, definitely in college, and that kind of resonated with me because I was into blues as well growing up, both of us, Otis Rush and different stuff like that. So it just started talking about music, and yeah, the rest is history.
And the blues is also one of the easiest things to get a rhythm section going. As you guys know, being musicians as well, hey, you guys know the whole 1-4-5 thing?
Yeah.
Here, you know, slap some lines down, and then we started jamming from there, and everything just kind of clicked. And also there was some really cool open mics that we got to play at, and got a good sort of response from the crowd and everything like that. And it just felt good and natural the whole time. I think both of us have played with tons of other people throughout our history of music and stuff, and it just... something just clicked, and it was a lot of fun, and we've grown so much since then as well too, and it's really cultivated into its own thing, which is really cool. But I'd say it was just ultimately extremely natural, just really easy fit, and here we are.
Are you both Kingstonians born and raised, or what brought you to St. Lawrence College when you first kind of started everything?
Yeah, I'm from Oakville. and Dan's from Pickering. And my family actually moved to Inverary and right around the time I was going to college. And yeah.
And I wasn't smart enough for university. So, no, it's, I had went to tons of other courses. I was really interested in music production as well too. We actually, the latest stuff that we're recording, which we'll get into, we did it all ourselves as well, trying to get better at that. But I checked out tons of different music schools and stuff and applied at them. And Humber was of high interest for me and stuff. And then when I checked out Kingston, I just honestly fell in love with the whole environment. Everything in Kingston is really cool. It's got everything you'd want in a city, but without committing to a giant city environment, living near skyscrapers and all that stuff. I think we can all agree living in this area. And that was one of the things that really attracted me to this area. And after committing the time in college and meeting Britt, it just felt like a natural fit.
Yeah.
That's the whole thesis of this podcast. Great city for a music scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we always come back to that. Kingston is such an interesting city because the amount of talent in the city is disproportionate to the population. And we're still trying to figure out exactly why. We're sort of getting closer. It's like this secret we're trying to unravel over the course of this podcast that we've been working at for about 3 years now. Any idea, anyone, what's going on here? What's just something in the water? Riley Jabor, you can weigh in too if you want.
Limestone must be. I don't know.
I think it's probably being a university town and a college town and stuff. There's a lot of young minds coming through here. And it's typically been quite accepting of the arts with a lot of the bars and pubs being able to host that stuff. There's lots of like speakeasies that pop up as well too. There's lots of different art exhibits. And also, I think having the downtown core where everything's accessible, you can go and walk around and see all that stuff all within, not necessarily a small area, but it's got enough stuff there that you're able to go and see a lot of stuff that you haven't really been able to see. And it just really cultivates that sort of environment.
Many different genres as well, which is awesome. You can go to a blues night and then also walk down the street and go to a jazz night. And then there's a folk night. And there might be a metal show up town. Like that's the beauty of it too. It's eclectic.
Maybe even competition as well too. You know, everybody's trying to one up each other in a certain sense out of pride of their own art. And they see what other people are doing and they try to, you know, make things better. And with the amount of that stuff, it might allow people to just get that much better and set the standard of the bar really high in here as well.
Yeah. It's a lot of talent.
Maybe not. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something you touched on. You mentioned your most recent recordings. You've been doing some self-producing. And to kind of spin off from that, throughout the pandemic, lots of artists have had to adapt where we can't get down to, you know, that downtown core where there's all these bars and stuff to regularly play because of restrictions. You guys have been doing broadcasts from home. You've been recording covers from the room you're sitting in right now. Yeah. Has that spurred some new skills in the production area? I'm always curious about how limitations can increase a musician's skill set or creativity and stuff like that. And I feel like that could be a prime example.
It was definitely a challenge at first. I think we definitely had to turn left field to figure things out. At the beginning, when we had the time, we were lockdown hit us and we were out of the job. So we had a lot of time on our hands and we really didn't want to waste that time. And it seemed like the perfect time to actually come out with a full album, which we're really excited about, which we're in the midst of. And it's all coming together really smoothly. But at the time I had a 10-year-old computer and I had hooked everything up to record and I clicked record and the computer just absolutely failed on me. The hard drive crashed. Everything was just an absolute nightmare. And we had saved up some money. We're like, screw it. Let's just buy, you know, the best laptop we can and all the music gear. And then we got the stuff home. I was so excited to just dive right in. I mean, I had a cell phone filled with guitar riffs and certain things. And we thought, let's just go into this, not having any expectations. And I had hooked everything up. We went to record. And then my whole soundboard, which I plug all the microphones into, is not even compatible with the new computer. And then I was like, holy shit, this is a nightmare now at this point. So, so we had went back, had to buy more new gear. And after we had gotten everything set up, we just started a challenge for ourselves where we wanted to record one song a day. Yeah. And we thought, you know, we had the time off, we're going to use just kind of crappy MIDI drums, but just kind of get a song
done.
We
were writing it too. We were writing it and recording it all in one day. Just no judgment, no limit. Different genres too. Like one day we did kind of like an R&B Erykah Badu style song. Mm-hmm. And then the next day it's, you know, like classic rock, like the Strokes kind of thing. Like we were just kind of doing something each day for fun. And then out of that came actual songs we actually enjoyed and started going off of and really, you know, thought this is what we want to release and get out there.
Amazing.
Let's talk about the new music because there's an album coming out.
Yes, there is. We're releasing an album on March 18th called Venus Eyes.
Calling Out came out maybe a couple months ago, something like that. And I remember hearing that and I got really excited because for me, this was something a little edgier and just a little darker than you normally get in Kingston, which again, I just found really exciting. I was like, okay, we got to talk to these guys. We've sort of had you on the radar for a while, but there's an album. Okay, this is the time. I want to talk about influences. You mentioned the blues a moment ago, and I don't think we've ever asked anyone about influences on this podcast before, which I'm very proud of because I feel like it's a very cliched question to ask, but...
Ever?
No, I don't think that's ever happened. Riley Jabor? That ever happened?
I think we went down that rabbit hole, at least with Futura Free, because I remember getting deep into the Midwest emo with them.
Yeah, okay. But I don't think we've ever said just point blank, what are your influences?
That's fair.
I don't think that's ever happened, but I don't think it was a rule, but if it was, I'm going to break that rule because I'm really curious where your sound comes from. Because there's a lot of stuff in there that I think I'm hearing, but I need it confirmed. What's going on there?
You want to start?
You start. You go for it.
Oh, man. I've been through a bit of everything, to be honest. I mean, I started playing guitar as a young guitar player. Most people go through the whole classic rock phase. I mean, I would have started off listening to Led Zeppelin. I think my dad put on Zeppelin and it was Presence, a bit of a weirder album for some people. They usually hear the typical ones, and that hearing that, I was like, man, I really want to play guitar. And my dad did have guitars and stuff in the house, so I could pick it up. And I started picking up a guitar left-handed, and I tried to change the strings over and that wasn't working. So I've been kind of picking up guitar and dropping it quite a bit until I was about 15 or so when I started getting serious about it. But I started off, you know, with all the big guitar heroes and stuff like Jimi Hendrix, big time, the AC/DC sort of stuff, Guns N' Roses, Zeppelin, all that stuff. And then from there, music brought me everywhere. I mean, I got really heavily into jazz for a while. I'm a huge fan of Aldo Meola, even the Mahavishnu Orchestra sort of stuff. Super, super cool. And then I would have gone into a total blues phase at one point, picking up, you know, all the B.B. King, Albert King, Freddie King, amazing stuff, a bit of everything. And then I went through a total jazz period as well, too, where I was just listening to Pat Metheny and Joe Pass. And right now, out of everything, I even went through a crazy metal phase as well, too. Right now, I mainly listen to classical music as well. That's my go-to thing. But honestly, a bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And I find I listen to totally different stuff than I play, which is interesting as well. But it's just, I think the nature of being a musician and just exploring different stuff. And you kind of have to be honest with yourself about what you play and what you perform and what your sound is in your own head. And I find there's never enough time to listen to enough music. There's so much out there. Everything is so diverse. There's so many unique sounds and different palettes you can use. And I'll never be able to listen to as much music as I'd want to in my lifetime, but I'm trying now to always just listen to something new and dig out new inspiration from somewhere. Mm-hmm. What about yourself?
It's also been that circle of just so many different artists. I have a soft spot for metal personally, you know, but I also grew up with like Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix and then Sade and Annie Lennox. And I'm a huge fan of Mike Patton and all his work.
Mike Patton.
Mike Patton.
Big time.
Yes. Like
Mr. Bungle.
Mr. Bungle, Faith No More, Peeping Tom, all Tom that Hawk. Stuff. I love Spirit Box, like the new kind of metal scene. Deftones for sure. Deftones kind of, you can hear it a little bit in some of our stuff.
I think our new album kind of has a bit
of that. Our new album for sure. Jeff Buckley, Opeth, everything. Yeah, just a wide variety of different music, but I also sing very much R&B style. So we kind of like to bring those together. So yeah. Yeah.
Cool. I'm glad I asked. That was a lot of stuff.
Yeah. It's hard to fit. It's
we can really keep going. It could be a whole day of that, but yeah.
Yeah. No, Dan, I love what you're saying about just all the music that's out there. I feel like that's, for me, the only time that life ever truly feels short is when I go into a library or a music store and I'm suddenly surrounded by more media than I could ever consume in my lifetime.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's just that little bit of sadness that there's going to be something great that you're going to miss just because you don't have enough time.
Oh, yeah. I even find back in my CD buying days, 10 years ago, you go through like the UCD section and sometimes you just find something and you don't even know what it is. And you just buy it. You don't even know. And you go and put it on and, you know, one or two songs in, there's nothing really that piques your interest. And you think, oh, you know, maybe I wasted my money here on something like this. And nothing really speaks to me or anything. And then one random track in, you'll find something that comes out of nowhere that can completely transform your idea of what you'd want to play or just anything in general. And you're still right, even with libraries as well too. And there's always going to be stuff we're going to uncover and we never have enough time to be able to go through it all.
Well, there's that excitement of the discovery too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely.
I think that's part of the excitement is your own personal discovery. You know, everybody's going to go through different outlets. They're all going to find their own things. You know, if you and I were put in the same musical library and there was tons of stuff, we would pick out different things and we would go on total different paths, just knowing that we'll never uncover enough, you know?
Yeah.
There's something so satisfying about those blind buys when you go in and you're like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to find out. And then it turns out to be exactly what you needed at that moment. I remember one time in high school, I went to a Giant Tiger and there was a like a bunch of DVDs or like three for $9. And I wound up getting like Soylent Green, some other straight to DVD thing. And then this DVD labeled Secret Weapons of Kung Fu. And it was all like 8-bit video game looking art. And I was like, I got to find out what this is. And it was all these punk music videos. It like opens up with the Vandals doing a cover of Don't Stop Me Now. And I was like, this is amazing.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I still have the DVD somewhere.
How do you get punk covers in the same package as Soylent Green?
Oh, it was just like three random DVDs. And I was like, oh, I'll take all of these.
Yeah, cool.
I'm going to take this as a, here's a segue. We're talking about media and the incredible depths of like everything that you can find in a lifetime. That's how I feel about Spotify often, is that there's so much that you just get a la carte for $10 a month that it almost seems bananas not to be able to consume all of it in any period of time. The streaming legalities and the moral rights of Spotify have been discussed a lot lately with the Joe Rogan, Neil Young situation. And that's got a lot of people looking at the moralities of streaming services and how much it's paying artists, stuff like that. Do you guys have any thoughts about all of the Spotify drama from any angle right now?
I don't know. I find it is a streaming platform. And I find the greatest thing about it is there is, like you said, so much music on there. There's playlists, there's endless things on there that I find, I can't find really on Apple Music. I can't just look up a certain playlist. I have to go through all these individual artists. And it's one of those things. It is a music streaming platform, but the artists need to get paid. I think that's like the most important part of it. And the thing is, so I don't think we should silence any sort of, everyone has a freedom of, you know, choice, and everyone has a freedom of being able to speak. But at the same time, I think it's I don't even know. I feel like I'm going to go off on it and I have found it really where I'm going to go with it. But as a musician, I want to be able to have my music on anything I can in order for people to hear it, especially since we are still smaller.
If I could weigh in, you can talk about Joe Rogan and, you know, should people be canceled and all that stuff. But my thing was, back when they signed him, I don't know how many months ago, for, it was like $100 million or something like that. And I heard that and I thought, okay, Joe Rogan's getting $100 million while most artists are getting peanuts. I thought that would be the last straw for a lot of people, but it wasn't. And maybe it is just because people just got to get their music out there. Like you said, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think people, it's really tough. You can kind of make a decision as a small time artist where you want to have your music out as many platforms as you can to make it as widely available. And even the service that we use, it's as a music aggregator, it does all the main streaming platforms. So it puts it up on, you know, Tidal, Amazon Music, probably even Napster and all that stuff as well too. It's on everything. And you can see all the stats of where you're getting your plays from, which is really interesting as well too. Like we get a lot of plays in Germany and Europe and different stuff as well. Not so much here in Canada. So it's kind of really cool to be able to see that sort of stuff. So you can kind of decide, do I want to, you know, put myself up there, take a bit of a cut here where we would majorly make our money off of, you know, selling merch in person and stuff like that. And doing the shows and make money off of that sort of stuff. Or do we want to really limit ourselves and sell our album, say on Bandcamp, where that's the only way that somebody could to download it. And then you might have a small handful of people that, you know, personally that really want to support you and do that. But other people don't want to take a chance. I mean, as we were talking about earlier, you know, buying 3 DVDs for $9 or a couple of CDs, artists aren't going to sell their CD for, you know, $3 or something like that. Some do, but a lot of people think it's, you know, only fair to sell your album for $10 to $20 or something like that. And you're not going to get as many people listening to it as you would having it readily available. But that also leaves you in a sort of predicament where there's so much choice out there. I think we can all agree having streaming services that sometimes you don't even know what to listen to because the library is so vast and you don't even know where to begin. And it's interesting. Before, you, I feel like you'd go into a music store and you kind of have, that's your selection right there. But now everything's on it. And with too many choices, where do you start, right?
Fair enough.
You mentioned the music aggregate service you use to put your stuff on Spotify. And I'm always curious about that because I don't know. I think that's something that a lot of beginner artists, maybe people that are just recording for the first time, are going to struggle with choosing is how do you get your music out there in the digital age? Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, go ahead.
We actually didn't really know too much about it jumping into it. Originally, I had speaking with a couple of my close musician friends from some different groups who I know had their stuff up online, and they had mentioned a couple of different names, and I had looked them up, and we actually went with one that's called CD Baby, which is a widely available one, and it's basically your typical music aggregator sort of service. You do get the option when you are uploading your music to decide if you want to have it in specific regions or territories. You don't have to put it up available everywhere. You can decide if you want to do downloads only, no streams, or you can do specific sales and stuff as well too. But CD Baby, for the most part, I haven't used honestly 2% of what that website is capable of because there's so much stuff for artists there. They do stuff on building web pages.
Yeah, the dashboard on the front kind of has all that for you. It shows you, you know, how to get your YouTube channel verified, how to get more Spotify streams. And it definitely goes through a wide range of different stuff, not just with the music, but with, you know, your image and everything else along with it. So it is actually pretty informative and great.
All the questions you want to know about shamelessly promoting yourself are all there on that website in one form or another as well too. And they have all these different sister brother sort of sites that are right off of it as well too, that will use your material and make a band website for you, or, you know, allow you to make merch using already uploaded images you would have used for, say, like your album art and different things like that as well too. So there's quite a bit of stuff on there, and we haven't really used it for all that sort of stuff. We go in and are, you know, scratching our heads trying to figure out, how does this copyright get allocated? How do we do all this sort of stuff? And thankfully it's worked so far for us up until this point, but.
Let's get back to the music. I want to play Calling Out, the single from the new album. Is there anything you want to say about the song before we jump into it?
Calling Out is kind of a song really about what everyone, I'm sure, is experiencing these past couple of years. It's definitely something that we're really proud of, and it's definitely a new sound for us, and the lyrics are really, they speak volumes to us, and we're just really excited for this album to get out there for you all.
Yeah, I'm just really excited for everybody to hear this song. It's something that we've spent a lot of time on, and I think it really speaks a lot as to what's going on right now with a lot of people dealing with the lockdowns, and even currently with everything going on in Canada right now. And I think it's just a good wide metaphor for everything. And it's also musically something that really speaks to us, that contains, you know, some of that heaviness that we really like, and also some jazzy sort of undertones. And I think it has a really specific feel. And if you haven't seen it as well, too, go to YouTube and search up Lotus Shaker, because we do have a really wicked music video as well, too, that we tried to basically have somebody line up really artistic imagery to the music, which I think also really just stands behind our message there.
Sun will set and we forget.
Thank you for listening to Kingston Live. Be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out our new website, kingstonlive.ca. You can also hear our sister show, Kingston Live On Air, on Amherst Island Radio 92.1 FM and CFRC 101.9 FM.
What is that clip, that spoken clip partway through the song? What's happening there?
We really liked the idea of adding a clip in the song. It just, the ending was really cool. We wanted it instrumental. And then I kind of have like a Claire Torrey ending kind of thing, like the Pink Floyd Great Gig in the Sky ending. But we wanted something that was going to be really cool before then. And we found one on YouTube. It was a veteran. I think it was a soldier from the Nam War.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was an incredible speech that he was talking about. And unfortunately it was copywritten. So we went on a bunch of different websites trying to find, you know, something that would speak volumes and just had that message in it. And then we found this Robert Frost poem, and that's where it's from. It's just a random fella. It's not Robert Frost. It's a random fella apparently reciting this poem. And it just,
yeah. Really cool Robert Frost poem. We actually spent a lot of time trying to go through royalty-free audio samples. I don't know if either of you have been through this rabbit hole, but it takes you pretty deep. And it's mainly just NASA stuff you can get for free, which is quite boring.
Yeah.
Because they're just way above Earth.
Yeah, here we are.
Eating a sandwich.
So it didn't really
A sandwich through a tube or something, probably. Yeah.
The stock footage of the audio world.
Yeah.
You both mentioned metal influences earlier, and that didn't surprise me. I think that's part of what clicked in my brain when I was talking about the song having a little bit of darkness and a little bit of edge to it. Because like I grew up listening to Black Sabbath and Pantera and Metallica and stuff like that. But Kingston, there's not a lot of like edgier, harder music, at least not that is kind of at the forefront in Kingston. Does anyone have any idea, anyone want to offer a thought, what's going on there?
There are like definitely a few bands I can think of that are probably more hard rock metal. It's a harder genre to play live, I find. You don't see that too often locally. A lot of outside bands, you know, come in and they do their tours and it's awesome. But I don't know why. It's a great genre. I don't know if it's something that's changing a little bit. I've noticed it is getting a bit softer, especially with, you know, the more popular metal. It's getting a little softer. They have to keep it kind of going. But I'm not sure why. And I definitely think they should have at least one venue. I know Overtime was that spot for a while.
Yeah.
And the Mansion, of course. Sorry, but...
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, with Overtime kind of close, and also Time to Laugh brought a lot of the heavier bands coming. Is it almost an erosion of the scene, like the spaces that those bands were ordinarily getting booked? Is that something that we've seen in Kingston? Is that something that seems to be contributing to the disappearance, perhaps, of some metal here?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's hard to say for sure. I remember going to tons of gigs at Time to Laugh, actually, some really heavy bands. A lot of really cool Quebec metal bands came through. I remember seeing Beneath the Massacre, and that was just such a fun experience. Probably one of the loudest shows I went to, and I couldn't hear a week afterwards. A lot of fun nonetheless there. I think metal is also a bit of a harder genre to keep going through a whole career. I mean, Metallica doesn't make sense. They've gone through so many years, and they've lasted. Everything's amazing with all that they've done. But it's hard. If you're one of those really heavy bands and the singer's screaming at the top of his lungs, unless you're in, say, Meshuggah or something like that, most people, their voice doesn't last doing that for, you know, more than 4 or 5 years. And then at that point, the band might start having clean vocals. And then you have the fans that are probably, they want to hear the heavy stuff. And they're saying, why are you doing this? Like Opeth, for example.
Yeah, he can't scream anymore.
He can't really do that sort of stuff. So they've really kind of pivoted with their sound. And I played metal at a point where it was your typical sort of hardcore scene where everything was really crazy live shows and everything was just like those really heavy sort of breakdowns where they go into a halftime sort of thing. And that's really, really cool for 2 or 3 years. And then it gets kind of old, I think, after that point and stuff. So it's hard to keep doing 4-4 halftime breakdowns and still make them sound new if that's what, you know, a large part of the music's based off of. And that's not to pinhole the music at all. I'm still an avid listener of metal, and I love a lot of that stuff. And there's a lot of really cool new bands that I think are kind of transitioning, where they're showing sides of all sorts of different genres, and they'll just include that the heavy music in there as well too. And who's to say what music is in what genre or not? I think maybe these music platforms are really keen on what sort of music style are you? What are you putting your stuff into?
Filling a room, maybe, especially locally. It's probably maybe not as popular of a genre that is going to really fill a room. I think that's a lot of these venues are really, you know, avid on having that, because, you know, they want to sell tickets.
But I encourage anybody who hasn't gone to a metal concert,
go to it.
Go inside
that. It's the safest place you can go.
Go inside that mosh pit.
Yeah.
You're going to get slapped around a little bit. You're going to have the time of your life. And if you fall, these are the nicest people
you
will ever meet that will pick you up, make sure you're okay.
Yeah.
I've seen it countless times. I've been there countless times.
Same.
It is its own amazing experience too. Yes. I encourage everybody, check it out.
Yeah. Well said. And you guys made some good points there. And Dan, something you said earlier kind of clicked with me. I think being a metal musician is almost like being an athlete. And you were touching on that earlier, how you can only kind of do that for so long. Even the screaming, eventually, with certain exceptions, your voice is going to burn out after a while. You know, if you're an athlete, you play for a certain amount of years and then the body just can't take it anymore. And I think in today's musical climate, especially with that kind of a genre where it is a little more niche and it's much harder to find that audience, it's going to take like that time, like how much time is it going to take to build that audience versus burning out?
Yeah. That is such an accurate depiction on the whole thing, because I've been there and I remember playing gigs where, you know, you're doing, you know, you're tremolo picking. I know you guys are guitar players, you know that as well too. And doing that as fast as you can, playing death metal, just flying through those notes. At the end of that gig, you're sweating bullets and you don't even know what happened the last half hour, and you get off and you're just trying to go to the washroom. And
I liked what you said about going to the shows though. And I think that's really important, because a long time ago we talked to, I don't know if you know the band, the Kingston band Hollowood. They're not a metal band, but there's, you know, the slightly edgier, faster, more aggressive music. And I remember Tara, the bass player, a good friend of mine, she said something about how, you know, people, they see the screaming, but the screaming is relatable because you're screaming with them. You know, it's a communal thing. It's not they're screaming at you. They're screaming with you. They're screaming for you.
Yes.
A lot of bands actually that I've seen live footage from, a lot of the times when they have that big screaming part, the crowds are singing it and the singer's not even doing it anymore, because they know, how am I going to keep going on this tour? I've screamed the last 6 nights in a row and I've got 30 more gigs to go here. So I'll let the crowd do some of the work as well.
Yeah. I think there's also a sense of community in a lot of those heavier bands and heavier scenes too, where there's, even if the band, if the artist can't perform, if the vocalist has completely blown out their vocal cords, sometimes that happens during a tour and they'll just be like, well, we'll keep playing. And it's a karaoke type thing for the rest of the tour. And the audience always absolutely adores that. I've seen like so many bands do that. A recent example was Every Time I Die, less to do with vocal degradation, but more band drama. But they completed a tour without their vocalist and the audience was super into it.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That's amazing.
It's an interactive performance.
Yeah.
I like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be there. That sounds a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Dan, Brittany, thank you so much for joining us. This has been great. Tell us one more time, what do we got for the people coming up?
Yeah, we have a new album coming out on March 18th called Venus Eyes. It'll be available everywhere for streaming and downloading, and we're really, really proud of it.
Yeah.
This is going to be a new era of Lotus Shaker for sure.
And hopefully we'll see you on stage at some point in the near future too.
Definitely will.
Hopefully soon.
Yes.
Yeah.
This has been Kingston Live. We encourage you to rate us on your listening platform of choice and subscribe where possible. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Titan Sound, hosted by Riley Jabor and John Sanfilippo. Writing and research by Peter Sanfilippo. Executive producer Rob Howard. Kingston Live is a member of the Canadian Live Music Association. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.